expert staff and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back and waiting for Dave Grenning. I just got a note from our friend Steve Carlin, who has moved down to South Florida from years in New York. And Steve says that the last second Friday push, unfortunately, has scratched. So let's see if James can come up with a alternative before we get off the air. So we got about 90 minutes, and we'll see if he's got an alternate. All right. And I sent Seth over to the press room with the donuts. Today's donuts from Bake Shack in Dania Beach. Can't recommend Bake Shack highly enough. The official breakfast pastry shop of At the Races. I keep looking behind me to see for Dave to wander in, because if he's not here in another couple of seconds, I'm gonna have to reach for Hammer, because we're gonna start to stack up. So all right, let me well, we did take care of we took care of the two Turfway events, so I can retire those. Yeah. All right. Well, I don't. Yeah. As for Oakland, by the way, because this might be the only chance we'll get to mention it, you do have the two Arkansas bred, the No Double, and the Down the Dusty Road. Those are the two stakes, and they combine with the last three stakes in New York. It's interesting. They chose not to use the Busher. And let me go to that page while we wait here for the guys to come back. Because I think they assume they made the decision that Jody's Pride might be a little too tough, so they went strictly the 8th, 9th, and 10th when it comes to the cross country. So it goes Stymie, No Double, Tom Fool, Gotham, and the Down the Dusty Road. All right. So I mean, if you're playing the All Stakes Pick Four in New York or the Late Pick Five, well, then you do want to look at the two Arky bred races, all right? Because that'll give you a chance to play the five. All right, here we go. James has revised the LSFP. Here's the last second Friday push with the scratch out of the fifth. He is going to go with the two, No Burn, eighth race. He thinks that the Chad Brown favorite is vulnerable. 4-1, No Burn, the two in the eighth, now the last second Friday push. All right. So thanks to James for a quick revision. What's going on, Seth Merrill? Where's our man?
He wasn't in there, but I saw Ron. I hadn't seen Ron. It's great to see Ron. So I was shooting the breeze with Ron a little bit, but Dave wasn't over there yet. I don't know. Are they still clocking?
No.
Or is he out at...
No.
He's maybe Palm Beach or
no,
Palmetto?
He's
okay.
He's down here.
Well, he wasn't in the office.
Let me check with him. Otherwise, I'm going to quickly call Hammer because we're going to end up we're going to be stacked up. I'm surprised.
I'll toss one while you're dialing the phone. I'll toss one out for today. I like no violence. 10-1 in the second race. The one horse by violence hasn't lived up to that in the first couple of starts, but now switches things up. I like when they have a little win early breeding and don't get it done first couple of starts, first three, four starts even, and then they switch things up. So he's been sprinting. He hasn't tried the turf yet. So turf, two turns by violence, and there was a sibling called Forgiving Spirit that won in the second career start. So I thought there was a little little win early top and bottom. So 10-1. I'm going to go with the one. I have it 1, 3, 4, 5 in the second today at Gulfstream.
By the way, this would be the first chance I have to mention. Nice pick we did yesterday. Nice pick four at Tampa. And it could have the thing could have been exponential.
Yeah, both of the short prices. The second horse the horse that ran second was a better price and was on the ticket. So that would have juiced things up nicely, but did get it done. So.
All right. Well, Dave, I guess Dave is not on campus, so let me, and I'm not getting a ready answer of whether he wants me to call him now or if he wants to wait until later. Let me get Hammer in here because I know Caton's coming. Welsh is coming over at 11. So let me get Hammer in here, and we'll figure out. We'll get Dave. Whenever we get Dave, maybe Dave and Welsh together, which would be.
DRF double team.
Well, and I do have a great picture of them from Saratoga from the paddock that I could use. And Hammer's ready for us anyway, so it's perfect. Hammer, good morning.
Good morning. I had to check my watch to see if we were early, but we were never early. It can never be too early, only too late in horse racing.
That's true. That's true. You can arrive too late. You can move too early. That's right. Good point.
That's it.
Seth, say hello to Seth Merrow, who is sitting in.
All right. Out of the main hinterland down to South Florida.
Flew in fresh. Yeah, flew in, enjoying the did a little TV from their paddock set this morning, and it was a little steamy under the lights, but I'm still enjoying the weather.
Unlike our equine friends who like to ship from warm to cold, I'm sure you are happy to shift from cold to warm.
Yeah, absolutely. I said up in upstate New York the last couple of days before I left, 60 degrees still, which is nice in February. It's still much nicer down here.
Well, it wouldn't be as steamy under the lights if you weren't wearing a wool jacket. It's unbelievable.
Sometimes you got to get a locker at the airport and just leave that thing there. Oh, that's funny.
I didn't know that was an option.
It is an option. If you came by bus, it's definitely an option. I don't know if they have. They don't have those lockers in the airports they used to have. It's pretty funny. Oh, it's great. So I had a laugh. You have Marcus on with the cat, with the traveling cat. And anyone that's ever had cat vet duty knows that it's never a fun ride when you take him. But my question was, how far away is that vet?
It's a good question, actually.
Unless he was circling out in the parking lot until you finished up. But I kept thinking, man, I bet, a good 5-10 minute ride. I've met the max. But anyway, it's pretty funny about that. But all good here. We're back home after a little Nashville run last week, which was great. I highly recommend Nashville any time of year. But I'll tell you what, in mid-February, for a mid-February run, the place was still rocking there downtown. Went to a couple of Billy Strings shows. And anyone who hasn't heard of Billy Strings or never seen Billy Strings, all they can say is phenomenal. The guy is – I've been to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shows. I have never seen someone do what he can do with an acoustic guitar. I'll tell you that. So, the bluegrass theme thrown in. He's got a great band, but it was just fantastic. We had a great time. and made Muscle Shoals and the Grand Ole Opry and Helen Keller's house. I mean, we turned, you know, 2.5 days into a week like anybody. So we had a great time down there. But back here, back home and kind of getting ready. I made my arrangements for Vegas yesterday. So we'll, I'm excited to go to the tournament, not as a player, but as a just to check out the scene. I'm kind of excited for that. Seth, will you be in attendance?
I will not, unless maybe I can score in a last-minute tournament myself. But we haven't broadcast down there in the last couple of years. But I highly recommend it to people. It is literally described as like the horse players' convention, and I think that kind of nails it. It's, you know, 1,000 of your closest racing friends all in the same room. It's fun.
No, I'm. That's what Steve said. You gotta check it out. So I mean, it's a hop, skip, and a jump. So why not? So
and I always tell Steve when he came up with the idea and started doing it. I said, horse racing tournament on the radio. How's that gonna work? But man, it's fun. I listen all weekend long. He's picking the brains of some of the better handicappers in the country, and it's definitely worth tuning into as well.
Yeah, so I think that's the deal. I did the same thing like you said. I was like, what can you talk about? But every 5 minutes is another person coming up, giving another way to, you know, they'll give away the handicap. So that was pretty cool. Had a couple of things I wanted to talk about before we start talking about the races. We got John White. I don't know if you knew this. I saw a little note in the Santa Anita things. John White was inducted into the Washington State Hall of Fame. How about that?
We talked on Monday, and John talked about, you know, getting the he was surprised. He thought he would be a runner up and have to wait out another maybe a year, but he was absolutely tickled as can be. It's really a lovely honor.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. And I read that, got a big smile and texted him and he talked for a little bit. But you know, congratulations to him. They announced our finalists right this week. For Racing's Hall of Fame. Is it always this early? Because the ceremony's in August. I don't remember it being this early, but
it always is. And then they announce the week before Derby, the Monday or the Tuesday before Derby, the week before Derby, the last week in April.
Oh, okay.
They'll announce.
It's not, it's not that far. But I was looking at, boy, I'm telling you what, as I go through all the horse finalists and the people, whew, this one is close to home for me. I looked through every single one of these. I mean, I have a close ish tie to just about everyone here, and I'm you know, if I could hit the all button here almost, I'd say let's go to a lot of them. I don't know how you separate them, especially when you know, we got Blind Luck, who's been on there for a while, right? I mean, these are some of the ones, if you don't know, and then all of a sudden you pull up the PPs, you just go, wow, just she did that. And, you know, a little story with Blind Luck. I mean, I remember sitting at Del Mar and Hollendorfer coming in and asking for a race versus Philly. He just picked up from Florida. He goes, can you write one of those starter races? All right. So we did. And she was eligible, obviously, for a starter race in her second race, and she went on, of course, to win and move on and, you know, win a ton of races. Game on Dude. I mean, Game on Dude. I think he went three Santa Anita handicaps. And I remember the first one. I was in the first one. Chantal Sutherland was on his first Santa Anita handicap. I think he was going off at the 20-1 or something. And I remember coming back, and it was a close race, and they had a big, long inquiry and ended up staying up. And then a few years later, he ran in one of the most contested ones that we had in a while with Will Take Charge was in for Lucas, and Mucho Macho Man was at the top of his game with Game on Dude. And I remember having to do the weights for that with Mike Lakehow was here with us. I mean, I remember having a lot of sleepless nights over these. End up being very, I think they were all 1 pound apart. And of course, the local horse Game on Dude. The thing about Game on Dude was he did a lot of most of his damage, you know, at home here in Southern California. He did run second in a Breeders' Cup, I think, to Drosselmeyer, and did a couple of some damage at Charlestown. But you look at his resume; it's not too bad. Gio Conti, you know, you think of him. I tell you the truth, I'm in my little office. I just have to look up, and one of probably what he's most famous for is being the last horse that Zenyatta passed when she won the Breeders' Cup Classic at Santa Anita that year. So I see him on my wall all the time. And Gunrunner, of course, you know, he came here early and ended up winning that Breeders' Cup Classic at Del Mar. Harve de Grasse is one of the ones I'm not as intimate with, and she did just like Blind Luck. I think she was Horse of the Year even. Then you get to Justify. I mean, I can turn around on my wall here and see some really cool picture of Justify that Churchill Downs sent me because I was such a fan. So, and a unique picture there. And look, it's not that often where, you know, a trainer walks into your office in mid-February and says he has an unraced horse that can win the Kentucky Derby. Could you please make this maiden race? And which was, of course, what Bob did. And we ended up making the maiden race, and, you know, the rest is history. But that doesn't happen too often. So, you know, Kona Gold, I mean, got to see him run many times. Actually named a race after Kona Gold. And everyone knows his history in the Breeders' Cup. He ran four times, or was it five?
Five
times. So, and, you know, just, you know, he stuck with that little S with a circle around it for sprinter. And for some reason, people have had a block. But if there's ever a deserving war horse, it's Kona Gold. I don't know why he's Lady Eli. I mean, everybody knows her story, coming back and winning, and just a super filly, rags to riches. Who many don't remember, but Todd had a string out here, and at that time, and I can still remember watching her maiden race in my head, going 7 furlongs, and it just, that's how it just stuck out for me. And then she ended up winning the two races here, the Velocity Virginis and the Santa Anita Oaks, and I think she won the Kentucky Oaks, and of course that great stretch duel in the Belmont. So she's there, and then you got the people, come on. Christophe Clement, Kieran McLaughlin, and Graham Motion, who I know through Monmouth Park. Kieran McLaughlin, when I first got there in 1989 and lived on the corner at the Whiskey Hill house. It had four rooms that I shared, one with Randy Schulhofer, one with Marion Alligott had a room, and Mary Cartwright and myself. And next door was, lo and behold, was Kieran. With his wife Letty, and he was working for Wayne Lucas at the time, who had his string down there at Monmouth. And so, you know, been a friend and rooting for Karen for the whole time. Graham Motion and Christophe Clement came on the scene about mid-90s, and got them to come to Monmouth Park many times to win stakes. I've known them for a while. Of course, Doug O'Neill won two derbies many, many other races, Breeders' Cup races, everything you could ask for. And I always say, if you want to own horses and run horses, and you want to have fun at the same time, go to Doug O'Neill. Great guy and a good friend. John Sadler, we all know, been in the game forever. You know, maybe the flight line saga will help push him over the line, but he was, I think, well deserving before that. And then you got John Sheriffs, who, you know, what can we say about John Sheriffs? I see him on the wall too, because he's got Zenyatta. And you know, he's one of the rare people that have won a Breeders' Cup Classic and a Kentucky Derby. And so I had to look that up last night. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's eight people that have won a Breeders' Cup Classic and a Kentucky Derby. Vanberg, Whittingham, Neil Drysdale, Belmont, Wayne Lucas, Baffert, Pletcher, who are all in the Hall of Fame, and then Brad Cox, of course, with the, and he's not eligible for the Hall of Fame yet, and John Sheriffs. So, just a good man. So, go to the jockeys. George Chavez, saw him run when I was back at the Meadowlands of Monmouth, and you know, he turned into a New York legend. And Joel Rosario, who knew him when he started Golden Gate Fields and came down to Santa Anita Road for years. And I see him all over the country to this day. And we've, you know, been buddies ever since. So very, very close association this year with I'm glad I'm not a voter and I don't have to make a decision. But I wish them all good luck.
Well, the beauty of the new system is you could vote for all 17 or whatever the number is.
Yeah, you know, I think I like that better, don't you?
I do. I mean, the some of the mechanisms were restrictive and didn't make sense and helped create a logjam in a lot of areas. So it opened things up. There has been a huge backlog of sprinters. There was somebody involved going back a few years that was on the nominating committee and fought, as it's been explained to me, fought against every sprinter that would come up, and it was just preposterous. They didn't belong in the Hall of Fame. It may be the craziest thought process ever, but that person is gone, and a lot of the sprinters have thankfully have been, you know, dutifully enshrined.
Yeah, good. And like I said, I hope Kona eventually gets in there. He's the true definition of a racehorse with his longevity and his just consistency. He just who runs in five Breeders' Cups?
Actually, I did look it up because I wanted to be sure. It was only four.
Okay, that makes sense. And then of course he just runs. Look at his times. Look how fast he ran. I mean, he just ran fast every single time, and.
He had that unusual scenario where he finished third, then he finished second, and then he won. Then when he tried to come back to defend, he finished fourth the next year. So four Breeders' Cups, and he finished in every pay slot.
He had to play the cycle.
Exactly.
Yeah, and he was so dependable. And of course, trained by Bruce Headley, who wasn't really known for running a lot of horses, I'll say, but he did keep this one going. When he had a good one, he let him roll. So I hope horse wise he's one of the ones one of the people that get in. So locally, of course, you talked to Brad earlier, and you know, I'm in 100% agreement of what Brad said about you know, this rain situation out here. I mean, it takes a while. It's kind of bizarro, you know, hey, it's raining. Are we running? You know, it's like, what? I mean, some of the best days we've all ever had was in the rain. And, you know, even out here in Southern California, it's just, but those are the rules, like them or not. So sometimes you can use rules to make things a little bit better. And I think in this case, by moving the Saturday card to Sunday, hopefully would guarantee staying on the turf, and with a grade one there and a grade two races going, it just doesn't make any sense to run them on the dirt if you have an option. And the worst thing that could happen was to get to Saturday, which is tomorrow, have it be a downpour, and then they cancel, you know, in the morning or halfway through the card or something. That's the worst thing that can happen. So if you can eliminate that on a big day, I think it's best, and they move it to Sunday, and lo and behold, there's really not a whole lot of other stuff going on a Sunday, stake-wise, so, and the people that were coming, some will be inconvenienced, but I think most can make the switch over, so that was good. Another thing that's happening is the new Tapeta surface is, I want to say, 99% ready. There's actually a meeting today at Santa Anita. I'm not at Santa Anita today. But there's a meeting today at 10 o'clock this morning with the horsemen to talk about the protocols and, you know, the how it's going to be handled as far as, you know, times and breaks and things like that. So it's getting close. I'm going to say within a week it's going to be open, which will probably guarantee no more rain in the area. But anxiously awaiting that. It was kind of visually appealing looking at that, and it is for training, and it's not for racing, and it will help some of the turf horses, I think, be able to get a leg up because we don't train on the turf out here, and it'll be just something else into the mix, and we're hoping that works out really well. So that's kind of some of the local updates. Of course, without the racing on Saturday, there won't be a coast to coast, but there will be on Sunday, and that'll include three of the races from Santa Anita as well. But some good racing on Saturday, I tell you. You know, listen to them. I did a little deep dive. I'm intrigued by those four Aqueduct Stakes. I really am. I mean, well balanced, and the Gotham especially with that one turn mile. And he even got a couple horses from California to ship out that probably, you know, didn't want to butt heads with the Baffert contingent. I don't blame him, but maybe more so because of the one turn mile, especially in Sadler's case. But congratulations to them, and of course the Fountain Youth card. Fantastic. They do a good job of pounding up those big stake days, and Mike Lakow and Keith racing guys put together good cards. The Fountain Youth, I think, is very intriguing. Locked, I heard you guys talking. I think he goes favorite, don't you? Maybe not by a whole lot, but there's a lot of horses this weekend I noticed that are just going to be look-see. You've got you know, Deterministic. Of course, people want to see what he's up to. You got Speakeasy, Victory Avenue, Door Knock, Locked. You know, let's just kind of wait and see how they do on their you know, probably prep for a prep to get back. So some really interesting races there, and the card on Saturday, on Sunday at Santa Anita is interesting as well. We talked about the lack of older horses available for races last week a little bit. A lot of retired horses, and the ones that were above the fold, so to speak, went to Saudi, and they won't be available here for a while. Especially after if they run in Dubai. So not a lot of top horses from last year carried over. So earlier in the year, the Big Cap's one of the races that, you know, used to be the spot to go in the early part of the year, not so much anymore. But what else you got?
Some opinions before Mike Welch. I just heard from Dave. Dave had to go up to. Dave had to go up to Palm Beach, and Mike Welch will bring us up to date. I'm not sure. We'll get some details when Mike joins us.
Good.
All right. So I don't know, but so Dave, I will say this: Dave is offering. I said, do you have an opinion you want to share? And he mentioned one horse, Royal Majesty in the Colonel Liam, which of course goes early on the card, goes at 12-13. Royal Majesty, the 7 for Bill Mott in the 3-year-old mile turf race, the Colonel Liam. So 8-1.
That's the third race. Well, we'll take note of that for sure.
Dave is judicious when it comes to when you ask him for an opinion and he comes back with one that tells you something.
I agree. I totally agree. Here at Santa Anita, there's four stakes on Sunday, leading off, of course, with the San Felipe, and Nisos makes his second appearance here at the meet. I don't know if there was any surprise that it was him, but you know, it's a very relaxed Bob Baffert that we see out there in the mornings now. He's got, you know, no pressure. As far as, you know, getting those horses ready for the Derby, and you know, I talked to Jimmy Barnes a little bit. He goes, yeah, it's a little different this year. It's not, you know, push, you know, making sure everything's, you know, 100% right. And so it's a little, he's just running them where they run. And, you know, there's nobody better than placing horses in the right spots for these kind of races. Brad Cox is really following along in those footsteps and placing his horses right. But he had a couple other horses, Bob did, to do, and he tried to put Nisos right back in, along with Wind Me Up, who ran an improved race last time. I mean, he's running against the best, so he might make some noise, you know, later on if we see him show up in another location. But, you know, this is probably a sit and take, let's just watch and see what he can do. He's raced back. He ran in the San Vicente last time, and now he's stretching out again. So let's watch Nisos and see what happens. But then we had in this three competitive stakes, starting with the Kilro Mile. It's, you know, going from top to bottom here. It's a nice race. Easter, of course, is one of the favorites in there, as is Du Jour from the Bob Baffert barn. Kind of scary to say that, but, you know, he only got beat 3 lengths in the Breeders' Cup Mile. I got to think he might be the top horse. Goliad, of course, guns it to the front. and has held on the last couple times, and he's going to try and do that again. And I mean, he's just clicked off 9.999, going the mile, and he could do it again. So I look for him. Iridio, unfortunately, he got it done last time. We've been chasing this horse for a while. I missed him. I don't see him coming back. But if I'm looking for a horse with a little bit of a price, maybe it's Dandy Man Shines, who comes out of the Mathis Mile, where he ran very good, and then a good second to Goliad last time. So if you're looking for a little bit of a price there, but I'd work around Easter and De Jure in there. The Big Cap, the San Diego Handicap, which is race 10. I heard Brad say, well, anyone can win it in there, and I kind of agree. Let's see. Excuse me, it's race... Whoa. Where is it? Race 8. I'm sorry. The Big Cap's race 8. I'm getting ahead of myself. Highland Falls comes out here. Now, you know, like, talk about Brad. You know, so as far as a 300 in, he's never been in a stake before, and he's going to send him out here to go a mile and a quarter. But if he's doing it, he must think the horse can do it. The his ratings, his numbers are right up there with the top horses. So Giroux was very probably happy that we moved this race to Sunday. I think he was tied up on Saturday. Now he can make the trip out here for Brad. So take a look at him. I'm interested in the second timer in USA for John Sadler. Subsanador, he was very highly touted last time. Actually went off the favorite. Look at that in the San Antonio. Didn't run terrible. Maybe he was getting used to the territory. He hadn't been out in a while. So I'm looking for him to run a big race in there. Hector Berrios takes over. He's a grade one winner South America. So I'm looking for him to run a big race. So I'm just going to throw that in there as a goofball horse. The Buena Vista, which is one of my favorite races, the grade two going a flat mile. There's Ruby Nell, who shipped back for the Pegasus and, you know, ran a pretty darn good race. I maybe gets overlooked a little bit in here. I like him. I like Closing Remarks, who was probably the best calbred last year we had and run some good races in open company. And hasn't run bad, but, you know, it's kind of sneakily only got beat a couple lengths with a couple sixes next to him. I think we're going to get a good price with the leading rider on there, Closing Remarks. I take a look at him. And, Justique as a bomb for John Sheriff. So contentious races. I mean, they're deep, and that's what you're looking for. So three of those races are included in the cross country: the 7th, the 8th, and the 10th. And there you have it. So you give you something to do on Sunday.
Yeah, then of course there's a force out here at Gulfstream. They're forcing out the. Rainbow on Sunday, and the last two races at Gulfstream, the 10th and the 11th, two turf races, a mile allowance and a mile and an eighth maiden special weight. Those are the two races, the 10th and the 11th, combined with the last three stakes at Santa Anita. So it starts at 4:36 on Sunday with the 10th at Gulfstream, then the 11th, then the 7th, 8th, and 10th at Santa Anita.
Right. And it's nice even those two tracks, when you have the races 2 and then 3 at the same track, it makes it a little easier to to follow handicapping-wise. So, yeah, so big weekend on Saturday and also now on Sunday. So we're looking forward to it.
Hammer, I appreciate it. Glad this is going to work out, even though, you know, kind of threw a little bit of a curveball, but let's players spread, they can spread the money out a little bit, a little less pressure.
Absolutely.
On Saturday.
All good, and glad you got a running mate down there in Seth, and you guys will cash a few tickets on your own.
We hope so. All right. Rick Hammerly, everybody, away they go, and infield's open on Sunday as well. Should be a nice day. Let's get Mike Welch over, and Caton Brader is here, so we'll see Caton in just a couple of minutes as soon as Mike jumps aboard. And speaking of Mike's, Mike Salido is here, who is the toast of the town after Junior Alvarado's outstanding ride, where he thought he was going to be fourth, but maybe I can be third. Wait a minute, I'm going to win. So, and Mike, we were talking yesterday, and Mike is getting set for what lies ahead, the next opportunity for Senior Buscador. Seth stepped away too. So I again, I'm also waiting for an answer. We'll see if Mike, what Mike can tell us about Dave having to head up. And I don't know if he's at Palm Beach Downs or at Payson Park. So that is part of the, that is part of the equation. We'll find out as soon as Mike comes over from a couple of doors down at the media office. So I don't want to get launched into anything else until we get Mike. I was going to save that for him. And I already told you about the two fairgrounds races we did talk about already, too, so I can move that aside. All right. The we can also maybe get an update from Mike if there's any more. Actually, that was going to be a Dave Grenning topic. I should mention a little bit more as we wait for Mike. Should mention some of the other options. This Preakness future wager, there's 40 betting interests, and obviously Nisos is the obvious favorite, and starting at 4-1, we'll see what happens to it. And of course, there'll be the Saturday. What is interesting, actually, is that the pool closes at 8 o'clock on Saturday night, not on Sunday. So the Fountain of Youth result, obviously, will be known, but you won't know about the action at Santa Anita. But I mean, let's be honest, Nisos is the player. Do you want to use that, or you want the headset?
No, you know what? I can hear you.
You like the? All right, you got it. Mike Welch, good morning.
Good morning.
Dave Grenning said that you would have everything I need to know. And
well, no winners, but everything else you need to know.
All right. I mean, was he called up there on any on any pressing
today?
Yeah. Or just,
well, no. Todd. Okay. Todd worked Fierceness. He worked Born Noble. He worked Agate Road. It was a big day up there for him, and that's
all right. So that was.
I didn't even know Dave was going. We had dinner last night, and I said, "What are you doing tomorrow?" He said, "I haven't decided yet. I don't know." And then I got a text from him
that he was going
to tell me that. After the fact, told me he was up there. So he went up there yesterday to go see Todd, and Todd wasn't there.
It was his anniversary.
It was his anniversary, so he went back again today, and
I should have told Dave that it was Todd's anniversary. Well, all right, good. I was worried that there was some
No. Everything problem. Sounds good. I got a copy of the work tab from my clock at Dave Norton showing me all the works and who worked already, and you know, all the names were on there. I was a little concerned Born Noble, you know, did not work last week and missed a work, and was hoping we'd see him back on the tab today, and sure enough he was.
So, all right.
All is well with him. He's gonna point obviously, for one of the Derby preps, it will not be Tampa Bay, according to Todd. Other than that, everything's in play.
Agate Road for Tampa.
Agate Road, I think, is Tampa, yeah. He just said the owners did not want to run at Born Noble at Tampa, so he still has plenty of options left over. He said even the Florida Derby, but if he's going to run Fierceness here and then, you know, maybe Speakeasy coming out tomorrow, too, if everything goes well tomorrow, then I'm sure he wouldn't stack all three of them in here.
Well, let's use that as a jumping off point then and talk about the Fountain of Youth. And we'll work our way backwards, Mike. And you start with Speakeasy. some people interpreted this as a decision that came out of Winstar. What's your feel about him running?
You know,
could it have been
an Elliott decision? You know, talking to Todd earlier in the week, he listed all the pros and cons of running him here and running him in the allowance race. And the one point that Elliott said to me that made the decision for them was, this is a mile and a 16th. And the allowance race is a mile and an eighth. And he said coming back the first time, or stretching out around two turns for the first time, they liked a mile and a 16th better than a mile and an eighth. Obviously, the competition is going to be a lot tougher, but Conquest Warrior is in the other race. And
it's today.
It seems like no slouch, and maybe a horse that they're going to have to reckon with somewhere down the road. But, you know, I think drawing the inside, drawing the rail, probably had something to do with it, too. When I asked Elliott if the points had something to do with it, he kind of sloughed that off a little bit, saying that if he's good enough, he'll get the points in the next one. So that wasn't a concern. Obviously, we've discussed this, at least Dave and I have, but you're probably not going to need as many points this year as you did last year just because of the Baffert situation. So I know the Mage people, one of the reasons, you know, they were decided to come in here was to pick up some points, as they did with Mage last year. I think he was third or fourth last year in this race and picked up just enough points that might help him get in. And they were concerned that maybe we need to pick up a few here before moving forward to the Florida Derby. And again, I said the same thing to them. I don't think you're going to need as many points this year as you did last year. But, you know, who be it am I to tell them to, you know, have them miss by 2 points because they didn't finish fifth in the Fountain of Youth or something. But I think there are other reasons for the decision to go here. And I think the fact that Speakeasy and Victor Avenue are in this race make it a lot more fascinating. It's really going to be interesting to see what these two do moving forward off that big number race, because there are some people that are skeptical that the big number was a little bit of a false number. Even Todd, you know, questions it a little bit. It's just a matter of how much did the track change that day. There was no more dirt races for quite a while. I did notice, you know, when we wrote about it, that, you know, on the Pegasus race, a lot of the riders came back caked with kickback, which gives you the indication the track probably did slow down a lot from in the 6 hours between this maiden race at the second race on the card, and then at 6 o'clock at night or whatever they ran the big race, which could have affected the figure somewhat. But again, it's two turns for both of them. There's just a lot of, things that could affect how they're going to perform. Horses tend to react negatively to big, big numbers first time out. So we'll see what happens.
There's the recency element that's a positive for them.
Exactly.
Then there's the comebackers, Locked and Dornock. Then there's a third tier of conversation here, Mike, and I'm really anxious for your read. Real Macho and Frankie's Empire are absolutely within hailing distance of everybody. And Bo Yates is a serious horseman, and I love that he's running him here. And Rowan Crichton said, this horse is good now, I'm running him. And he's coming off of a five on Thoroughgraph. That puts him squarely in the picture.
Yeah, no, I don't fault either of them for
right?
taking this shot here. You might as well find out right now where you stand in this picture. Obviously, Real Macho benefited tremendously from that pace scenario in that allowance race that day. Born Noble and Merritt just really went toe-to-toe through some pretty quick fractions and set it up for him. But he still had to get the job done, and he was able to do it. The added distance, you would think, would probably be a plus. I know Rohan has no excuse for his poor effort in that two-turn race, his first two-turn race. So might as well give him another shot. And if it doesn't work out, then you got a one-turn horse moving forward. And there's a lot of money to be made with a quality horse, you know, in that regard as well. I think the key to the race, more than anything, is how will Dornock and Locked perform off the long layoff. obviously they're the class of the field, but how many times have we seen good two-year-olds not come back as good at three? We've already seen Fierceness, you know, throw in a major disappointing effort off the layoff and from two to three. Some move forward, some don't. And pretty much Danny Gargan has already said he hasn't trained this horse to have the Fountain of Youth be his best race. He's looking to make the next one, which is logically going to be the Florida Derby, a better race. And then, of course, if everything worked out, to have the Kentucky Derby be his best race of the spring. So Locked missed the work. He got sick. So that's a factor. He missed the Sam Davis. He's come back and worked well twice. Todd's very pleased with the way he's been doing. My clocker, Dave Norton, has a very good report on his last work. So that's a positive. On the sheets, he's the fastest horse in here. If he runs back to those numbers as a two-year-old, he did have some sort of an excuse, or not some sort. He did have an excuse in the Breeders' Cup. The kickback was tough that day, and he got, you know, fell back and really didn't get going until obviously Fierceness was already long gone, and he just did miss finishing second, and second to a pretty good horse too. Yep. So you got to think that he's the to me on paper anyway the horse to
no
beat.
No doubt.
Coming in here, and then if he didn't have that, you know, little glitch in the training and miss a week or two, I'd feel rather confident that he would probably be, you know, he's also going to get a fairly legitimate pace scenario, I think, to run out in here with Dornock in the race. And, you know,
Speakeasy's got to go.
Speakeasy will definitely go, and Dornock is going to push him, and LeDombro coming out of a sprint. He's got to have some speed, too. So the pace should be legitimate. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what they do with Dornock. I don't think he's going to want to try to outrun Speakeasy to the lead if Speakeasy leaves running from the rail, and that's his intent to be in front, which you would think would be their plan. You know, lesser experience horse, two turns for the first time. It'll be easier for him to get two turns, I think, on a lead than if he's got to chase and try to pick somebody up. So that's how I envision the race setting up, with Speakeasy and LeDombro maybe heading out early, and they try to sit a little bit with Dornock.
Have you heard from the Delgado camp on Victory Avenue's approach?
I would say, yeah, good point. I mean, if he had broken better in that maiden race, he'd have been in front. I would think, watching the way they train him,
they're trying to rate him
and take him back. I mean, even his works leading up to his first race, I mean, we saw both from him in his workouts. We saw speed when they wanted it, and we saw those long gallop outs as well. I mean, and the combination was what led you to believe that he was such the real deal. And again, he did not break clean, and Louis kind of rushed him up. Maybe if he had sat a little bit more and tried to make maybe one run, maybe the outcome would have been a little different. Or if he had broke cleaner and made the lead a little easier, maybe he holds Speakeasy off. It's hard to say. I mean, this horse is a serious horse. They definitely trained them, you know, like you would a horse that's going to go a lot further the next time. It'll be interesting to see what the strategy is going to be.
You ended up Locked Dornock Speakeasy.
I did, and it was Speakeasy / Victory Avenue. I didn't know how to separate those two, and in hindsight, I wish I had put Victory Avenue up there, you know, a little more, especially thinking maybe if Dornock is really not at his best, maybe those two are got a little bit of edge over him, too. But it's just coming out of that maiden race, skeptical about the number and the stretch in distance. It's a tough read here. It really is. There are reasons to like a lot of them, and there's reasons that you could knock too. I mean, there's pluses and negatives all over the place. It's a great race. I mean, to me, it's not a betting race because the prices on all the major contenders are going to be too small. Not for me, anyway. But unless you take a stand one way or the other on one, and maybe throw out one of the favorites, and
the alternate the alternate betting approach, if you believe, and I'm going to try to make
Real Macho run second or third,
exactly, or Frank's Empire, either or, if they intercede in here, and let's say for instance, you got no Dornock, why couldn't it be you know, locked Real Macho Victory Avenue, and you've got a palatable try in there. I mean, there's I do not think this thing is simple by any means. And frankly, Merritt coming out, we should remind everybody, Merritt is running today, so take him out of
the Yeah, I think that was a no-brainer. Yeah. I think Safi was just waiting to find out what Todd was doing, and he was going to
go
the other way, especially being in the allowance phase. He might be loose on the lead in there, whereas last time he had to be used, you know, he was used very hard against Port Noble, and Safi, he said to me he had missed a work with him, so he wasn't 100% fit for that race. The other thing I will tell you is Michael Yates has Fiona's Magic in the Devona Dale.
Uh-huh.
She worked with Frankie's Empire, and I thought she was the better of the two in that work.
How about that?
Not by a lot, but I thought she was going a little bit easier at the wire and on the gallop out, so she might be one to take a look at over there, especially if you think
that.
Just FYI, you know, may need one.
I
really don't know. We haven't obviously haven't seen her do much training at all other than what's on XBTV.
Let's get into the Honey Fox backing it up, the 1 mile, and Fillies and Mares. Chad with the Chili Flag. I thought Be My Sunshine was going to get a very advantageous trip in behind the speed, and just looking at some of the selection grid.
These races, you know, I got to tell you, some of these turf races with the full fields, they're just such head scratches. I mean, they're all about trips. There's not a lot separating so many of the major contenders in here. They're good gambling races. I know you're going to wind up getting a couple of big prices along the way in that second half of the card in these stake races, especially the ones on the turf. I picked for the flag in there.
Jimmy Toner.
I know I know she's been away, but she's training well. You can't knock anything she did last year at all. And I think she's going to get loose. And if the course is favoring speed a little bit too, mile is right up her alley. So I just took a shot there.
All right.
Mean, there's just so many other ways you could go in this one.
8-1.
Yeah, I mean, the price is right. You got Louie, and you should get a horse that's going to be loose on the lead. I mean, you know how many times, you know, you try to predict these things and they get into the first turn and you're loose on the lead is sitting fourth under a big hold. But we'll see how that turns out, but hopefully they'll get in front and be able to back this one down a little bit.
Moving back to the 12th, the Canadian turf, the mile and a 16th, and it seems like Manuel and Smoke and Tea are the obvious players, and Ice Chocolat back off the allowance win for Gary Barber and Cassie. So for me, 2-3-10.
Yeah, Emmanuel is going to be the favorite, I guess. I haven't seen the morning line or anything like that, but it's only his second start since June, so I guess there's some concern there. His best race is probably good enough to win here, but I went for a pace play. I took Saratoga Flash on the rail for Safi, moving back to the grass, which is obviously his preferred surface. Drew the rail. Last time he got loose on the lead, he ran a career best buyer in 99. At Kentucky Downs in a pretty good race, certainly is comparable to this field, I thought. So that was just my chance in there. But again, there's so many of them. I mean, you got a Tone who last year won the Pegasus. He's obviously not the same horse, you know, at this point as he was then. But he's still running well. His sheet numbers are very consistent. He had a tough trip last time. And was beaten less than two lanes in the in this year's Pegasus. So, you know, I expect him to be in the mix at the end, too, depending on what kind of trip he can work out.
The Gulfstream Mile lost Castle Chaos. Going to run into York, Falcone. Still leaves an interesting kind of a weird group of horses. And Tumbarumba comes back out of the Hooper win. He was a Universal Good Thing on the show that weekend, and not going to be that price again.
And as the race developed and as the race was run, I think he got lucky for everybody that bet the Universal Good Thing, because Steel Sunshine should have won that race.
Probably.
I mean, he got killed leaving the gate. He had came about eight wide into the stretch and still almost ran him down a few more jumps, and he probably wins at Castle Chaos, too. It was a race that looked like it favored horses coming from off the pace. And Tumbarumba was closer to the very fast pace than the second and third finishes were. And I just think even though my gut reaction was to say, well, Steel Sunshine was best the last time they ran, the pace scenario here is not going to be as quick. So I think Tumbarumba will have an edge over Steel Sunshine in the rematch as well. He might even find himself on or with the lead. There's just not a lot of speed in here. So I picked Tumbarumba and Steel Sunshine to duke it out again. And, you know, Witt, obviously a bit of a question mark coming back to a fast main track for the first time in a while. But he's a two-time graded stakes winner on dirt. So even though he's been doing most of his running lately on turf, Todd's going to is hopeful that he can get him back to a dirt campaign this year. If things don't work out well on Saturday and he you know, disappoints a little bit, then he can always put him back on the grass for the rest of the year.
Well, Witt's sibling yesterday in that second start, Coinvest, fell short to the Bo Yates.
He did. He didn't, you know, he just got left with too much to do, obviously. Got back a little bit too far.
That turf course is prone to that. And by the way, something came up yesterday with Mike Salino. The coloration of the red paint on the rail on the turf course, it extends past the wire.
Oh, you mean the markings to let the riders know when they're getting near the finish line?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, someone else said that. I didn't notice it. It's not color. It's not paint. It's a sleeve, I think, that they put on there.
The red sleeve?
And whoever put it on may have just, you know, had a bad night and moved it up a little bit too far. So
it's
just a guide for the riders and the fans to know when the finish line is.
Well, except that the one rider.
Spot. Yeah. I didn't look and see if they switched.
We'll check to see.
Hopefully. Larry Combs pointed that out as well.
Yeah, Wednesday I noticed it. Let's talk about the very one. And Marty McGee should be here to remind everybody that it is the very one. Mile and 3/8, and there's some prices to consider here.
Yeah, like in all these races. I mean, yeah. You can make a case for so many of them, and when that happens, obviously some of them are going to be a price. I took Sister Luann. Again, it's kind of a pace play with me. Mile and 3/8 is a bit of a question mark, but I thought she ran pretty well in the Pegasus Turf. I think she's going to get loose in here. It looks like she's as good now as she's ever been. So, and Safi, Safi's the leading trainer for a reason. And Ken Ramsey is the leading owner. So they've been on a roll. Why not? If you mentioned four other horses, I would probably not be able to poke a hole in any of your reasoning there too.
Well, I will mention that, at 8-1, Miss Yearwood is interesting to me, and she gets back on the turf after a synthetic seasonal start. And Chris Landeros, I don't know if he is able, you know, I guess he's going to, you know, go back to where's he been riding? He's been riding at,
I don't know, Turfway?
He's not at Turfway. He's been at... Oh my gosh! He's been at
Oakland.
I think he's been at Oakland. Right? Yeah. So he comes in today, and he's here to ride her. So he's giving up a day of mounts to ride, you know, for his father-in-law, and that caught my eye a little bit. But
with her is her running style. On this track.
Yeah.
In a race that really does not have a lot of pace to it. I mean, it's interesting. The two speed horses in here both come out of the same barn. So it's interesting to see what Safi's going to do with Angel Nadashiko, who was in front all the way to win a race at Santa Anita in her last start and then joined Safi's barn. I don't think she's the quality of Sister Luann, and I'm certain he wouldn't want the two of them to be
knocking heads
up front. So I'm going to guess he's going to want to put Sister Luann on the lead, and if he doesn't, I'll have a discussion with him later.
Now, and of course, Safi just won his 1,000th race, right, the other
day?
Yes,
he did. He's in Barbados, for the weekend.
And we should also mention, since you mentioned Ken Ramsey, we should mention that Nolan Ramsey is going to go out on his own starting April 1st?
I believe so. I think he's going to have horses here. Someone mentioned Laurel, maybe. It sounds like
for
a guy going out on his own for the first time, he's got a lot of horses.
50.
Yeah.
He's got 50
horses. I don't know how many grandpas, but he will have a lot of horses.
The Devona Dale, as you mentioned, and we should also note there are four pick fours tomorrow and three pick fives. The pick fours start in the second, in the fourth, in the seventh, and in the 11th. Four pick fours. The Devona Dale, and the Devona Dale starts the rainbow. There is a rainbow force out on Sunday. Just FYI comes back here, and it seems like everybody's against her.
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of people I talked to are the same. And Leslie's Rose has faster numbers in the two races she run. Now, they're 6.5 and 7. They're not a mile. She still has to prove that she can get that far. But and then obviously there's the questions of recency there too. Just FYI, coming back, you know, for her first start at 3 with bigger fish to fry down the road. Obviously the objective here is the Kentucky Oaks, something in the middle. This is a starting point for her. You know, how fit she is or off the bench, it's a little bit hard to say. I will say one thing, she owes me nothing because she was my pick in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Filly. So I was off a series of some very, very good works. I haven't seen much of her works, you know, here. So I don't know where she's at as far as that goes. But it'll be interesting to see if Leslie's Rose actually goes post with the favorite over the juvenile champ. And I'm saying she might.
There's also, you mentioned Fiona's Magic for Bo Yates, and Shug's got Who Could Ask for Mo coming out of the Suncoast, ran well at 6-1. And
Into Sunshine, Into Champagne. Another. But again,
two for two.
Know, stretching out from 6 to a mile on a sloppy track last time. The numbers are a little bit on the light side, so we'll have to see, you know, if she can class up here.
Dean Wilkes typically has, I don't want to call it a putover, but he usually has a high-priced stake winner along the way. Let's wrap it up with the Here Comes the Bride and the McDarmida. The McDarmida starts that 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th. I should also mention, by the way, there is the Tropical $3 Turf Pick 3, which is the very one, Canadian and the Honey Fox. 10, 12, 13 is your $3 pick three. But what about the 7th, 8th, Mike?
Well, the McDermott, again, I went for the pace play here, main event. Ran tremendous and outgamed King Mac, who I think is a pretty good horse. In the Fort Lauderdale, just went too fast early on in the Pegasus. Again, looks loose from the lead from the rail here, and the mile and the three-eighths will be the question mark with him. And, again, maybe this is the kind of course that might carry a horse that may or may not want to go that far a little bit further. So he was my top pick in there. Again, it's none of those races where you can make a case for a lot of them. King Max, I think, will run a lot better. Starting over, is trained well and appears to be in top form now. Ran second at a big price in the McKnight. Not going to be that kind of price tomorrow, obviously. And in the Here Comes the Bride, looks like a lot of pace in here. Life's an Audible is the most logical horse to benefit from that pace scenario. I took a shot strictly off trips and price and whatever. I went for Time to Dazzle. This horse trained as good as a horse could train over the Tapita course leading up to that allowance win that day. Won for fun. Okay, back in the Ginger Brew, returned to the grass, which we've seen that she's handled well in the past. I mean, she won her first start as a two-year-old with a pretty decent two-year-old number back in September. A horse couldn't have got a worse trip than she got in the Ginger Brew. I mean, she was ranked. She was steadied like 100 times. Still only got beat 8 lanes. So I'm going to give her another chance, and I think she's going to be a price off of that. She came back and worked really well over the Tapita again here for this race. So just hopefully Joey will be able to get her in good position and not fight with her early and keep her in the clear and at least give her a fair shot to see if she's good enough.
Mike, who's your best bet tomorrow?
I think I made Leslie's Rose.
Leslie's Rose, you did.
Yeah.
What time is the report going up?
It should be up reasonably early. At 3 o'clock we should be able to get it up.
I'll mention that I asked Dave, since he couldn't be here, who his play of the day was. He came up with, out of the Colonel Liam, he's all over Royal Majesty of Mott's.
Yeah, I mean, that horse was you know, well-regarded in his debut, U.S. debut, and ran to it. He's going to have to run faster to win that race, but he looks like a horse that's capable of it. I don't know if I could would be confident enough to call him my best bet coming off of that performance there. But I could see where you'd like him. The real interesting horse in that race for me is Okiro, the three horse. This is a horse that also is a morning superstar on the Tapita, but just unproven at a mile. So it'll be interesting
to
see.
That's who I'm picking.
I mean, Kagino and Abramar ran well in that allowance race, and you know, they're back in here taking the next step up, trying stakes for the first time. But Kagino is very interesting. Okiro, very, very interesting to see
how he's going to perform. Pick.
Yeah, well, he'll be a little bit of a price. And, again, just a giant question mark as far as his ability to go a mile. But couldn't be doing any better. There's no doubt about that.
Well, there's no question.
When you see his workout reports.
Yeah, well, I don't like that because that's going to give everybody an idea. Caton, come stand over with these two so I can take a picture of the three of you for today's listing. Mike Welch, everybody, and we'll look forward to the Clocker Report coming, and we're looking forward to Caton joining Seth Merrow, and the two of them will take us together, put her in the middle. Yeah, there's no reason for there we go. All right, 1, 2. All right, hold on. Wait a minute, too close. What's going on here with this thing? All right. Everybody's got to put up with my famous, act. All right, got to do it from above. Ah, beautiful. All right, my paparazzi act. Sit down, Caton, and grab your materials. And we will spend the last half hour with Seth Merrow and Caton Bradar. And I'm sure if Seth had the opportunity to make Caton his new loose on the lead partner, he would take the opportunity. She wouldn't be mean to Seth. Thank you, Mike. Mike Welch, everybody. And Seth, because Caton's got hair, and so I'm sorry. See, right away, I'm mean to Seth.
I'm very glad that I do.
Yes. Exactly. All right. Well, I mean, she's got to go on television shortly, and so...
I just got off television.
Yeah, I mean, Seth's a television guy.
He is hair or no? He is a television guy, and you've been on with Seth.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Right? Welcome. Greg, welcome back. I'm sorry I missed you Pegasus.
Oh, that's okay. It's been a whirlwind, so I've missed myself a few times coming and going. But so far, at least I've gotten on the right airplane every time, so I'm in good shape.
Have you been balancing? You did some TVG.
Yeah, FanDuel for Oaklawn, also back and forth between Florida and New Orleans. So
yes.
And then every once in a while, I pop back to Kentucky to check on things. But it's wild. I am literally getting on airplanes every day to 2 days up until just now. But it's really cool because you're getting to see everything so fast
right. That
you just take it all in. And then you sit back and make some opinions after you've had a chance to see everything. So this is the first year in a long, long, long time I've gotten to do that, which I am really enjoying.
I'm envious. You get to Oakland. I haven't been there in a while, but that's... It's Saratoga-ish. I look at the weekends. You look at the apron there, and they're
And I have to say, I hit the jackpot this year because I was originally supposed to go for the Southwest, and then that's how I ended up at Pegasus. Was because it was a last minute move. They postponed.
Right.
So I stayed in Florida and did the Pegasus, and then Southwest was moved to a weekend that I was already committed to work in New Orleans. So which. Rained and was cold that whole weekend when it actually ran.
Yeah.
I went last weekend for the Rebel, and it was the best weekend I've ever remembered for the Rebel. I mean, in February, they never have spring-like weather like that. They were able to open the infield.
Yeah.
It was absolutely wonderful.
Well, it's funny because during Rebel week, during the lead-up, you know, you get the photographs, and there was a picture that came up of me and Hammer from the Rebel 2 years ago, where Hammer had to give me like two layers of sweatshirt.
Oh, yeah.
It was so, and we were in the building, and it was in the morning. Obviously, it was 8 to 11 because it's Central Time, and it was so cold. I mean, bone chilling cold.
It's one of those places that when it's nice, it's beautiful.
Right.
And when it's cold, it's really, really cold. And it's just damp, and there aren't a lot of places to get out of the elements either. And that's part of it, too, when you're covering it. So I was really appreciative. and I have been lucky because also in New Orleans, one of the big things we wanted to do was be there for Mardi Gras this year. And Mardi Gras was perfect weather. It was
nice
for Mardi Gras. So I'm told that I go back on Sunday night to New Orleans, and I think that I'm in for a little end of paradise for a while. But I think they're getting some rain again.
Did you guys ride the float again? Or?
We did not ride. This year we had relatives that came in. Doug's nephew and his wife came in from Tampa. They had never been to New Orleans before. So Doug, I don't know how he did it because I was also working. I worked at the track on Mardi Gras. I worked on Fat Tuesday and Lundi Gras. But we hit most of the major parades. That's the first time I've gotten the opportunity to do that, too. We did.
Oh,
Doug did all of them, but I did most of them. We did Endymion. We did Orpheus. We did Rex. We did a few others that I don't even remember the names of at different times. And, you know, the best part of all that is being around, you know, it takes the community of the racetrack and puts it in the community at large. And so we hung out with Brian Hernandez and Jamie Hernandez and their kids, and Joe Sharp and Rosie Napravnik and their kids. And there's a place called the Wits End that's right next to, it's actually very close to the racetrack and close to where we live. So for Endymion, we walked over to a friend's house who works at Santa Fe. Talk about small town and small world. And we're able to have a great house to hang out and have a party and then walk out. And I think everyone from the racetrack was there that night.
Neat. Well, it's the greatest. I've only had one really good stretch with the parades, but it stayed in the Garden District at the Indigo.
Oh, that's the best.
And I mean, right there. I mean, it just goes right by you. I mean, you can if you want to go in and relax a couple minutes, and then you go back. It's unlike anything anywhere.
I tell people
not
that,
comparable.
You know what? I think what's so great about it is you're just in the moment, and you're in the moment with friends, and you're in the moment with family, and you're in the moment with strangers, and everybody is kind of there for the same reason, and it's just a marvelous experience.
Exceptional. There's no place like it. Well, let's dive in, and you guys are going to ping pong. My opinions have been already kind of laid out there, so I'm going to have you guys, I guess we can start with the McDermott and just ping pong. I'll turn it over to Seth and Caton.
I went with Main Event. I agree with what Mike was saying. The turf races, you can point to four or five and have equal confidence. But I went with Main Event because I think does have the pace scenario in here where maybe he takes them all the way for George Weaver and Castellano on board. I used a little bit of King Max as well. I think that one from the outside could be a little bit interesting. Also at 9-2 and Headline News at 12-1 for Jimmy Toner, I think can be a player in here.
Got all prices.
And Tawny Port I've liked throughout the career, but certainly the move over to the turf has been kind of interesting for Clement, so he's a player too. I went 1-10, 3-7.
I thought that the 2, Anglophile, was for Brian Lynch, the meet he's had and the way he's run, though he hasn't won here at Gulfstream. I think he's sitting on a really good effort. You can't leave Main Event out with his speed, but I don't know if this one is going to be stolen on the front. And it's interesting because I also like Tawny Port a little bit. I think I've been waiting for that breakout performance on the turf since he switched barns. But, you know, he has that back class on the dirt to go back to, and I actually think he's very comfortable on the turf. I think it's just circumstantial that he hasn't won. So, but I think Anglophile, if the price is right, is probably going to be my top play.
So we'll call you two. There we go. Continue on. Caton, Here Comes the Bride is the 8th.
I went back and forth. I've been impressed with Ozara, but I couldn't concede it. I was real interested in what Mike was saying about this race in general. And, you know, Pounce has the worst draw in the world. If he had drawn, had drawn any better, I would be on her, I think. So I'm still going to watch the price with her. And, you could take Time to Dazzle also from the same barn. I like her. I liked Pounce better. And both of them are not in great posts, really, given that it's the 1 mile. I'll be interested to see if the rail is up at 59 feet. That's what I think it was for the in the racing form.
Yeah.
So that definitely helps, I think, actually, the horses that have speed. So maybe Pounce can overcome, you know, that post position.
I've got 2, 7, 9, 11. Seth?
I went 3, 7, 2, and 11. The interesting horse to me is Crown Imperial for John
yep.
Ortiz. Comes in with that bullet workout. And this is the kind I like. Relatively lately raced as a two-year-old, now some time off. Sometimes they come back improved, and I think that bullet work might indicate that. So the two is certainly going to get a little play in the mix, Crown Imperial.
Seth, what about the Devona Dale?
I went with Leslie's Rose. I did take a little shot. When I handicapped, I went back and forth. But on the recency and the decent numbers, I'm going to tilt towards Leslie Rose over just FYI. And you guys were talking about Into Champagne for Ian Wilkes, I think, off the 2-for-2 record. You know, the numbers are a little light, but I think there's upside still, but maybe with only a couple of starts. So 2, 3, 8, and 4.
Yeah, I'm going to use Leslie's Rose as well. That's an awful lot that she's going to carry now because Mike Welsh's best bet.
But everybody's on.
When he speaks, especially and talks about a horse like that, then I assume that the horse is really doing well, and that's kind of good enough for me. I liked her to begin with. You can't, I mean, just FYI, has done nothing wrong, so there's no reason. And, you know, the Fiona's Magic, I thought, was – maybe gets the best of it because she's outside those other two and can at least get a piece of it. So I'm probably going to use her 2, 3, 4. She's got the better price, I think. And I kind of put her even with Into Champagne as to the, you know, possibility of them. I think they're both talented. I think Into Champagne won't shock me if she wins this race, but I suspect that she might get overbet just a little bit. And I think you get a better price on the 4 Fiona's Magic.
It's interesting to hear Mike talk about Fiona's Magic working with the horse you like in the Fountain of Youth. That intrigued me a little bit.
Anything that Bo Yates is putting out there, I'm looking at 3 times.
Absolutely.
Because everything is live. Everything has got a purpose where he's placing horses.
And, you know, the fact that Tyler is back on Fiona's Magic, I think, speaks volumes because he must have liked what he experienced there. I think she didn't run a bad race when you look at it in retrospect. And I think the mile actually helps her kind of relax a little bit more in the early part.
How about the very one?
The very one.
Yeah.
This one is up for grabs, truly. I could go in a lot of different directions. I'm going to go for a price. You know, Anatolian didn't run badly in the La Preve. She likes the course. It's Mike Maker. Miss Yearwood is another one for. I'll be interested to see what she looks like. I don't think she likes this course. I think she's good enough on ability, but I don't know that she likes Gulfstream very much. But this year, Gulfstream's a different turf course than it's been in years past. So that's why I'm sort of inclined to give her another benefit of the doubt. And our Kelly Kim, you know, thankfully at the 1 3/8, probably the post doesn't matter quite as much as it would if this were a shorter distance. But I like her quite a bit.
I'm in the same boat, 6, 5, 10, and 8. And I thought the same thing on our Kelly Kim. I thought, the post position, but then, you know, 3 turns essentially should have plenty of time. But I put Anatolian on top as well. Luis Saez jumps on board, of course, in a race where, again, you can point to 3 or 4 in here and have kind of an equal level of confidence. Cairo Concert sort I looked at, but it's been a while since we've seen a win from that one, so I didn't put that one in the mix. But 6, 5, 10, and 8.
How about the mile?
I used Steel Sunshine. Heard you and Mike talking about that one, and kind of you know, Mike said went with Tumba Rumba given the pace scenario. I'm just hoping maybe Steel Sunshine is go to like the race 3 back and is a little more in the mix and doesn't have to make up a ton of ground. So I'll put that one over Tumba Rumba, and then Wit in the 3rd spot. Shaq Diesel, I think, is maybe a little bit interesting at a price coming off the 2 wins recently, one at Tampa and one right here at Gulfstream. You know, 15 to 1, I'll play around in the mix a little bit. 3, 5, 2, and 6.
I like Wit. I think he hasn't had the opportunity to try this one turn mile at Gulfstream, and I think it could be a really good move for him. If you look, his best races have been that, like the Bayshore, for example, the 7 furlongs. So the extended sprint or the 1 turn, but where you don't have to quite work so hard in the early stages just to stay closer. And I think, I mean, off the layoff, it looks like the works have been really sharp. So I would not be surprised if he shows a bit more speed out of the gate than he has in the past. I don't love the inside post, but it's IRAD, so I feel a lot better about that. And I just think he is going to turn out to be a real true one-turn mile horse. Tumbarumba, obviously, I think you have to respect in here. And probably Steel Sunshine amongst them, although Steel Sunshine would be a bet against in the win spot for me, but a definite use underneath.
It's pretty interesting, actually. And I you mentioned the one-turn configuration for Wit. It's kind of weird, given Todd's predilection for, you know, the winter campaigns. He never had an occasion to run here on the main track, which is strange because he wasn't ready the winter of his 3-year-old year. He got a late start, and then by the time as a 4-year-old, they had moved him to the turf. So it could be an explosive kind of an opportunity for him.
That's kind of what I thought. I guess that he did so well on the turf that you don't take him off, you know, in those early races. But then he kind of has tailed off as the competition's gotten tougher. And also he, you know, you can't quite get the exact perfect fit for him on the grass. And that's why I thought he's really intriguing.
Huh. The Canadian Turf, Caden.
This one is I personally think one of the toughest races on the card. You maybe can narrow it down to a few contenders, but I can't really split the contenders. So I don't really want to take a short price. You know, Siege of Boston is one that is going to be a big price, but I'm not going to pick him on top. I'm almost positive, but I'm definitely going to look at him to bet on. Atone is probably going to be a short price. Saratoga Flash has the rail, has some speed. Jeez. Threw in an absolute clunker, couple clunkers on the turf, but getting back, I mean, on the synthetic, but getting back to the turf could be a lot better. And again, I just didn't think that anybody stood out in here. So I was sort of looking for somebody who was a little under the radar and was going to be a price. So I would use him. Smoke and Tea is another that probably you would have to use, though he's another that I wonder how much he likes Gulfstream's turf course, the configuration or the turf itself. I mean, he always runs okay, but never seems to run his A game.
I'm with you, and I looked and looked and looked, and I eventually went to Emmanuel. And I wanted to go against, but he likes the course, obviously, 2 for 2. The layoff was a concern since finishing behind Casa Creed and the 4-star Dave. But a similar layoff last year, he won the race over at Tampa to start the season.
That's true.
I looked and looked, but I eventually landed on him. But I have a couple others that are a little bit interesting. Ice Chocolate from the outside. We're looking at 8-1 on the morning line. I thought off the win last time. And Turf King I put in the third spot. Again, another one of those lately raced horses that maybe comes back off a layoff with an improved effort. Looked really good in that Marine up at Woodbine. But again, that was back in July. But I think he's intriguing for Chad Brown. So 3-10, 4-2.
10-4-2. Seth, what about the Honey Fox?
7-6-5-4 for me. I put 4 the flag on top. The Jimmy Toner runner hasn't been seen since Kentucky Downs, but hard to fault a record. 5 times in the exacta in 8 starts, and all of those were in the 2023 season. So the layoff's a little bit of a concern, but the workouts seem to indicate that she's on her toes. Chili Flag, obviously logical for Chad Brown, Michael Dubb and company. Walkathon off the win last time. And Spansive, to me, is one at 12-1 to play around in the mix. Again, lightly raced by Caracanti and lived up to that, winning the first couple of starts of the career. And so has shown some promise. And I think now putting the second start of the season together maybe is intriguing again at a price. So 7-6-5-4.
You know, Chili Flag is kind of, this is one of those that on the trainer data numbers, on the thorough manager, this is an all race. Like any horse in the field can win. They're all within about 10 or 12 points of each other. Again, you hate to take the favorite, but Chili Flag makes a lot of sense. And what I've noticed is in those races, either just press the all button or go with the favorite. So in this case, I'm probably going to go with the favorite.
Caden, explain to everybody and Mike Salito was here for a little bit, explained to everybody about Thorough Manager, which is a tool that a lot of the jock agents utilize.
And that's sort of how I was introduced to it, because Doug obviously used it. But we were also very good friends with Ed Tucker when it initially got off the ground. And so we've seen the product since its origin. It basically is one-stop shopping as far as handicapping as well as data. So it enables a jockey agent to very quickly look up a horse's record. You can see running style, what it's prone to, what it does best. You can also see a raw number. I use the, as much as anything besides looking things up, I use the projected speed rating, the PSR, which is boiled down to a number just like you would boil down a ragazin or a thoroughgraph or any sheet number, and or a buyer number. The difference with that is this is a projected speed rating as to what the horse will run versus a reflection of what the horse has run. And if you go to within a 10-point to 12-point spread, usually about, I'd say it's about 75% of the time you have the winner.
Excellent. How about your Fountain of Youth?
Except I should add lately, when my handicapping has been really off. gosh, you know what? Here's what I'm taking. To me, this looks like a lot of speed, just a lot of speed. So Locked is where I'm going. It's not a very fancy pick from a standpoint of price. But, you know, I went back and watched the Breeders' Cup Juvenile about 100 times, and I think he broke flat-footed, which put him behind the field, which caused him to have to experience the kickback in a way that he wasn't comfortable at all. And he still wound up third. It wasn't a great race at all, but I give him the benefit of the doubt. I think with the outside post position and here in a smaller field and very different circumstances, it's going to be a completely different story. So I think there might be a little too much speed for Dornock. I'm not convinced that he doesn't need the lead or won't end up on the lead. You've got Speakeasy with the, maybe he turns out to be the real deal, but if he can jump into this deep end of the pool from the rail with his running style and adjust, then he may well be my Derby pick going forward, because that's a pretty, those are some pretty big hurdles
demanding
to get over.
Yep.
So that's where, but I'm eager to see him. I think the 2 has speed. I think the 3 could show speed. And then you've got Dornock. If all of those go, it just sets up beautifully for Locked. It actually could set up for Real Macho. I heard you talking about that one, and I think you have to give him a look as well.
Yeah, I went with Locked also. I think he'll be well-meant. You never like it when they miss, you know, a little temperature and they miss some time, but seems to be working well. So I'm going to put Locked on top. Dornock, as you were talking with Mike, it seems like Danny Gargan will be okay with a nice performance, not necessarily a win. I couldn't leave Speakeasy out, but it's hard to imagine. Sometimes they can do it, but that triple-digit buyer in the debut, we'll see what he manages. But Real Macho, you've been talking about him earlier, Steve. You've been talking about that one in Frankie's Empire. Between those two, Real Macho, that last win, I for TV this week, I talked to Rohan Creighton and I talked to Tyler Gaffleone, and they both seemed very, very happy, obviously, with the performance the last time. Rohan said the dull effort 2 back, he thought the horse was a little dull in the paddock that day, so he just wasn't seeing what he saw in the subsequent effort that produced the nice performance. So I'm going to use a little Real Macho in the mix as well. 8-5-1-4.
8-5-1-4 for Seth Merrow. Seth and I'll be on Capital OTB 8 o'clock tomorrow, 8 to 8:45. We'll go through the card, and I'll have my final. I'll have my final selections up later this afternoon. Kate and Bradar on FanDuel Television. What's the schedule?
We start today, right before the first race. I think we come on at 12:45 Eastern. Tomorrow, obviously, with the early post time, we'll probably be on about 15 minutes before the first race, and then all through the day. And we'll also have coverage. If you want one-stop shopping as far as the Triple Crown prep races are concerned, you want to be on FanDuel TV all weekend, because got them all.
Excellent, as well. And Andy's here.
Andy is here. Todd Shrupp is here. Matt Bernier and Larry Colmus. So this is a really fun team to get to work with.
Always great to catch up with Kate and Bradar, Seth Merrow, of course, and earlier, Hammer, Mike Welch, Scully, Brad Free, Marcus Hirsch, Nick Tamaro. There it is. Best of luck this weekend, everybody. We will send you out into the weekend. We didn't get to Rich today, but Rich's Santa Anita analysis, of course, at racedaylasvegas.com. Gus Alonso's Gulfstream action at Brisnet. TwinSpires weekend preview at the races. Replay tomorrow, 5 to 8 a.m. here on SiriusXM. Archive podcast in just a little bit. We will talk to you Monday. Big recap show. Good luck, everybody. Talk to you then.
Has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Caravelle in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint.
Pennsylvania and the PHBA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none. The best Breeders' Awards and Stallion Awards in the country.
If you're racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield, the leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically